Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to the Latin Rouge Cycling Podcast. We have Stage 12 of the Vuelta a España brought to you by Zwift, our show partner, as always, for the, I think this is like the Pierre Saint-Martin stage, where Team Sky absolutely sent it in 2015. Froome and Port went 1-2. There's one categorized climb. It's a Cat 1, and it's steady. 20Ks, 6.5%, yeah, some of it's a little bit steeper, some of it's not, but there's no kilometer over 8 point. Oh, it's 1.9% kilometer, but it's really steady. And there's no categorized climbs before it, and it's flat before it. So two options. A really soft weak break goes because they're flat, because the team wants to control, but then which team, like a lot of the teams, GC teams are hobbled here, particularly Quickstep, and they have the strongest climber so far. So a monster break went. I'll rapid fire through it. Benji will pick out the interesting riders from it. Turnison, Champoussin, Battistella, Lutsenko, Zambanini, Fabro, Kelderman, Caicedo, Shaw, Carapaz, Backlance, Bevan, Goldstein, Hagen, Oliveira, Rojas, Verwacker, Craddock, Brenner, Wiedeberg, Tiberi, Soler, Oliveira, Palons, Tamino, Vermeersch, Vine, Diaz, Canale, Turia, Jesbert, Ocean. Remix that into an LRCP rap.
What a rap that would be. That would be crazy. Yeah. I can imagine it already. Marc Soler with two teammates, already a stage win. Vine with two teammates, already a stage win. So that's a bit of strength in those two areas, but that does not mean that they're the all-out winners here either. Carapaz was in GC, one of the hopefuls for Ineos, but clearly fell out of that. So he tried to get in the breakaway today, hoping for a stage win, not necessarily to jump up to GC. If it's accidentally happening, then he might be happy with that situation. Though Kelderman with his teammate is also interesting, because Kelderman's only on like 14 minutes in GC here, and he's got a teammate here. He's not really the winning type. So what would his goal be? Is his goal to backdoor away into the top 10, or is he actually looking for that stage win that he's been hunting for his entire life and only found in time trial so far, if my mind serves me right, and a GC somewhere in some race. But on a road race, hasn't happened yet. So intriguing phenomenon there. When it comes to other riders in this group, there were quite a few strong ones. Like, you would say that Lutsenko is a strong rider, but if I put that guy against a Carapaz or a Vine or a Soler, I would say, no, that's not it. But Soler with two teammates, I said. Polans is interesting, though, because the dynamic we've seen with Soler in breakaways is that he seems to drop earlier on and then come back towards the end. We saw that with the stage that Vine won, the last one he won, I think stage 8. Soler came back in the final stretch and so forth. So I was expecting Polans to like remain as the strongest on the final climb, and then towards the end Soler to come past. And maybe that might happen, maybe that might not happen. But that was kind of my prediction going into the final climb on this stage. But this breakaway, solid gap instantly, because, like, what is Quickstep gonna do? Cavagna, like, we mentioned it yesterday, it's the only rider that can really do stuff on the flat. They had Vervaak in the breakaway for a bit, and eventually they ended up pulling him back, and that was at an interesting moment. We will talk about the breakaway stuff continue onwards after this, but I do want to mention this, considering it is actually connected to the breakaway. Vervaak dropped back, and it looked like it was called up at the exact moment that something happened in the peloton. Remco ended up crashing in a corner, a bend, and it was an interesting thing because it was very similar towards Alaphilippe yesterday in the way that he just slid out. It looked like he was undercutting the corner a bit. I don't know if he braked in the corner or not, but that was suggested by a few. What was your take on the crash itself?
It was actually, yeah, really similar. Some spectator footage came out on Twitter of the Alaphilippe crash because we couldn't see really what happened. There was no heli shot on TV. And yeah, it looked like he ran wide too fast and then tried to straighten up too fast and slid out on dusty roads. And something similar happened to Remco, and he landed on his right hip. He tore up his shorts a little bit. He didn't seem to hit his head, shoulders, everything else, legs, knees, fine. Just a little bruise, no blood, I don't think, too much on his right hip through the ripped shorts. So yeah, Vavaika called back. I think maybe a little overreaction, maybe a little bit of panic. Like, I think the idea with Oliveira in the break, with Vavaika in the break, was to be satellite riders to help out on the climb itself. I'm not sure the actual plan was for Vavaika to come back at that exact point. I just think they said, get back here to help chase. Wilco, everyone was rolling turns in the breakaway, really. Like, I don't know, Vine was the short favorite for the stage from that breakaway, but everyone was rolling turns because I guess Wilco had a dual GC ambitions as well. But there was an attack, but before we get to that, I remind you, it's the 1st of September. Autumn's here in the Northern Hemisphere. The rain is here in Andorra, and that means indoor season is here. Zwift has just announced a raft of updates landing soon, so there's never been a better time to join or fire up that account. Again, if you pause your subscription over the summer, there are more pace partners than ever before, and this is a personal favorite, the ability to chase your personal best ghost across segments, a new race series, and even new roads, all landing soon. Plus, with training series like Zwift Academy starting, there's never been a better time to give indoor training a shot. For more information or to start your free 7-day trial, head to Zwift.com through the link down below. But yeah, Battistella attacked in the break to try and force Vine's teammates to chase. Vine's teammates did chase Tamino and Vermeersch on the flat. That's why having teammates is so important, so he doesn't get forced to chase. They brought him back and no one else really tried because Vermeersch would keep pacing, I think.
Yes, and we also got to mention, like, we spoke about Kelderman a bit so far. We spoke about Kelderman being a rider that is gently moving up in GC, the larger the gap of the breakaway becomes. And because of that Evenepoel crash at a certain point, at like 40-ish kilometers to go, the tempo in the peloton went down a bit as they waited for Evenepoel, and the break extended to a point where I think they had 11 minutes and 54-ish seconds, if my memory serves me right, which meant that Kelderman not only jumped into the top 10, but was virtually on the podium in second of this Vuelta for at least a tiny bit. So at least he was on the podium for a bit, but we know that on the climb itself, the tempo will increase in the peloton. So that would only last for X amount of time. But we were certain at that point, right? Like, if you're at that point in the race, virtually second, and there's like 8 minutes to the end of top 12, for example, then it's very likely that if Kelderman does not suddenly collapse on the final climb, that he ends up in the top 10 of GC, which is a very good move. And you mentioned that before. Would that become an issue when it comes to balancing that with a stage win or not? And I guess we'd see on the climb whether he would have issues with that or not. But when it comes to that final climb, Peñas Blancas came up, and I feel like Alpecin controlled that really well for the initial part of the climb.
Vermeersch and Tamino pacing pretty well. But then really this was a straightforward stage. Fabro goes to the front, teammate for Kelderman, and he, for starters, Kelderman's got a good kick. That's why the fact that he hasn't won a world tour or even any road stage is like almost statistically impossible, because he has a like fucking good 10-second power for a GC guy uphill. So Fabro pacing was good because he just sits in, everyone sits in, he keeps the gap to the peloton, GC safe, and then if we go to the finish, we go to the finish, and I back Kelderman. But Fabro did his best, kept pacing, eventually pulled off after a lot of riders had dropped. Soler was nowhere, but he was just doing Soler things. He'd taken some tips from Almeida on pacing. Polance was yo-yoing. Lachenko was gone. Caicedo and Shaw were gone. We had Vine, Jesbert, not Champusin. Champusin, the big money move. not looking great. Jesbert was looking really good. Polance there, Vine was there, Kelderman and Carapaz. So Carapaz wheel. Marco Brenner. I don't do Marco Brenner erasure. Marco Brenner, what is he? Has he turned 20 yet? He just turned 20 4 days ago. The German on DSM. He's very, very good. He was there with them. So now is the tricky part, Benji, where Vine is probably people are worried about. Fabro's pulled off. Gensbert's attacked. And Kelderman has GC in the back of his mind, and that ends up with what we normally see, what we saw in Circuito de Getxo, the Spanish little one-day Wilco pacing.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like when Gisbert went for that move, Kelderman was also the one that also closed down Gisbert, but like Kelderman, the initial response to like attacks that happen against Kelderman, I feel like he's on like the biggest gear as possible. It's like he's mowing his lawn on his bike for some reason, and then it starts upping the cadence towards their wheel, and it's really interesting to see that. What I did feel like was happening was something similar with Carapaz towards, I don't remember, Luzardiden, I think, the stage where Carapaz like faked a bit, that he was like performing an Oscar performance, was pretending that it was completely done. I felt like it was kind of that. He was not necessarily showing his hand, which is arguably clever. Did you notice something similar, or am I imagining that?
Yeah, Carapaz is just acting as like it's ridiculous. I'll show it in the video tonight, but like the moment he's literally the second before he's attacking, he's like grimacing, pretending he's in pain, and then attacks. It's like, Richard, there's a delay from the TV to the cars. So by the time the cars have seen you faking, you've already attacked in real life. So it's completely pointless, but he's just so committed to the bit. You got to respect it. he gets his second Emmy award or Oscar today after on Luzardiden. Well, actually, no, he didn't get the award there because he got caught. But yeah, Wilco got played by El Jaguar de Tulcan, apex predator, hasn't had a great Vuelta so far, but you sense weakness. He senses weakness. He strikes, rides away from Kelderman, and beats and just holds the gap that he initially got. He only wins by 9 seconds. I'm not convinced he had necessarily better legs than Wilco today, but he played it for the stage. And that's, we've been speaking about a lot more, like playing for the stage 100% can and often has made the difference in Grand Tour stages this year.
Certainly. Now, I also want to shine a light on other people in the background. I think like Michael Brenner, 20 years old, was in the final four riders before Carapaz decided to make his move towards the end, and then Brenner kind of started falling back. But being 20 and doing that, we knew this guy was talented. I will be honest, I felt like he stagnated a bit at DSM for a certain period, but this year with his Tour de Suisse performance, I think he was like top 15 of my mind's all right about that. Or was that Burgos? I don't even know. A random race this year, top 15 somewhere, Marco Brenner probably.
He was good before he got COVID, and always the best race in the history of cycling.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Because it confirmed both Remco and Vine and not necessarily Plap. So, but we'll leave that detail out just to make sure the statistics
and,
are right, right?
Out of his pants, man.
Who?
Uitebroeks.
Jesus Christ.
Isn't that the literal translation?
It depends. Aren't pants like underwear?
I don't know. No, only in the UK. In Australia, pants means long trousers.
Very difficult, all these countries, you know, like, I don't know. I'm not okay with all these different meanings.
Anyway, Brenner looking good.
Exactly. And also next to that, what I said at the start of this, like, thing, Soler and Pollens was the one that held on longer. Soler didn't hold on as long as Pollens. And towards the end, while dropping, like, 10th last rider in the race, like, he ended up bossing everybody and finishing third. This is so typical, Soler. I don't know what's going on with him.
Isn't there a problem with that?
I don't know. Is that a barrier that he needs to go through or something before he can actually...
Well, shouldn't Pollens wait? If Pollens waits for Soler and helps him pace, does he make up that time gap? I know it looks like 20 seconds, but we're talking a 20-kilometer, nearly a 50-minute climb.
But
surely if someone waits and paces with him, Pollens paces for him, and Pollens was attacking the group as well at times, does Soler get closer?
But can you trust the rider like Soler, though? Like, it's weird, huh?
Yes,
do you have
flying.
The confidence?
He's flying. Yes, in this welter, he's flying.
I agree with that aspect, but do you have the confidence with someone that drops 10 riders earlier to still make it back? Only with Soler in this welter. Like, if any other rider does that, I'm like, throwing them out.
It's different for it's different for GC, like having a GC rider sacrifice for an Almeida. And then Almeida. But this is Polance. What chance does Polance maybe have to win? I know he's a nice rider. Did he win La Guelia? Yes, he won La Guelia. But what chance does he have against Vine, Carapaz, and Kelderman? It's not so great. So that's the trade of it. I'm not sure there's a correct answer. I'm just saying, you know, 2020 hindsight, it might have made a difference. We haven't mentioned Jay Vine. He did really, really well before the first rest day up north. We're down in a different climate. I can't keep emphasizing it more how the changes in climate and weather, I really, really think they make a huge difference, particularly for someone like a Gita or whoever. And I don't know if he was just on an off day, whether he's just tired because he's been doing more than a lot of people, like a Carapaz, like a Kelderman in this race so far, or they did, I don't know the what's either, but he dropped earlier than expected. And it was kind of similar to the Tour of Turkey situation. He had salt-crusted shorts, so maybe it's the heat, and he's really good in like 15 to 20 degrees. I don't know.
I found it really curious when that happened that Sportza commentator was like, well, Vine will need to climb a bit stronger than what he's shown today to get that KOM jersey in this Vuelta. I was like, that's a very early assessment of the situation based on this one performance, to be honest.
He still has double the points of Soler. and there's barely any, I don't know. I think, as we know, KOM jersey competition has little to do with, you need to be a good climber-ish, but it's more to do with strategy and targeting it than, you know, winning stages is more important than that. But yeah, Carapaz, Benji, I guess a going away gift for Ineos, a nice little bonus for himself, and just a good result. And also, I think, good that Ineos let him in the break. Or was it? Like, how, if you have your C-Rod hat on, do you still, because we were saying this about Soler, I was saying Soler should be helping Ayuso. And Ineos are thin on the ground too. Sivakov out, they just got Gagan Hart for Rodriguez. I think it's easy to say after he's won the stage, but I really think if you're not in the contest, if you're not in the leader's jersey, I do like riders having freedom.
I think so as well. I'm relatively similar with you on that opinion. I would, it would be very different in hindsight if, for example, a Rodriguez attacks the GC group today and gains a minute. Then you'd ask, okay, what would have happened if Carapaz was there? Would that have helped? Would Carapaz dropping back on the climb as a satellite rider would have helped Rodriguez in that situation gain time on certain riders? Yes, it would have, but in hindsight, from what happens in the GC group, which we'll go through today, that might make a different opinion. But when it comes to GC, let's get to that first and then talk about it. We've got a GC group that is starting the final climb, and we don't have that many Quickstep riders in it. We lost Alaphilippe, we lost Serien Sofov. I think there were three Quickstep riders at the foot of the climb, I'm fairly certain. The last two that survived were Vervaak and Van Wilder. But they were not the ones that were setting tempo at the foot of the climb, because Jumbo-Visma took it on. Jumbo-Visma took it on, and what they did was put Rohan Dennis at the front. They started pacing with Rohan Dennis. And did you feel like that tempo was significant? Because I swear, like, quite a bit of people were dropping.
I think the initial Dennis push was pretty firm. Like, it did seem to catch people. Like, Gagan Hart was badly out of position moving up. I think Ayuso was in bad position, maybe caught off guard. So I definitely think Dennis pushed on at a decent pace, probably just having a little look to see how does Ripshorts Remco look on this climb. Now, this climb really does suit Evenepoel's consistent gradient, long climb, 50-minute efforts is no problem for a guy that's done well in flat world champs, ITTs. So it does suit him, but I guess they had a little look. I do think in the end, and then they got Harper to pace quite hard. That was after Dennis had been pacing for a while. Egita looked no good. Ayuso looked under pressure the entire climb, and he reminds me of Pogacar more and more and more every single day, in that, like, even when Pogacar is sort of under pressure a little bit, like, I don't know, the way Pogacar on Planche de Belfie when Vingegaard attacked him, his hunched shoulders, the way he pedals, even when he might not be super dominant, he can, like, claw back into it. And I don't know, Ayuso reminded me a lot of Pog 2019, 2019 today, actually, even more than before. So he was looking good at the end, not so good at the start. I don't know. I feel like Harper put Roglic under a little bit of pressure at the start. And Movistar then called back Oliveira. He then started pacing really, really hard. Or I don't know if Mas attacked across to him. I think Mas missed an opportunity today. I think I went on a big thing on the rest day about how Mas is unfairly criticized. That criticism stems from days like today, where he sort of he'll never try twice ever. He will try once, half commit, and then settle in. And that's why he gets criticism, playing a little bit conservative. I think he should have tried. I think Mas could have dropped Roglic today and taken back time for second place.
I don't know. I simply don't know, because like maybe he's just not that kind of rider that has the ability to attack twice and still the ability to hold on to what happens afterwards. Maybe he doesn't want to be countered. He wants to stick himself in the race just in case. Let's say that Evenepoel has a bad day on Sierra Nevada in the mind of Mas, for example. And Mas is like, if I can just not get countered, then I'm not being put on even more time in this situation by Remco by the end of this climb. Maybe he's thinking that way, but I agree with you that he would probably be better off focusing on trying to get a one-up on Roglic instead. And whether that's by doing that second attack or not, I actually don't know. I do agree that it's probably the reason that he gets criticism, but I also never considered Mas the rider that is the attacking type on climbs. I swear even if Vuelta that he podiumed in 2019 is my guess, he ended up podiuming that by attacking a group that was looking at each other on stage 20, if I recall correctly. And those were the moments that Mas benefited from. He attacked, I think those were the moments where he attacked more times, where the group didn't continue setting a pace, where the group kind of stands still for a second, looks at each other, and that's where he tried to benefit from. And I think if a situation like that happened a bit later, it would have potentially occurred again. But what happened after, like, Mas went to Oliveira's wheel? Oliveira just kept pacing, right, for a while?
Well, Mas did. He made a mistake as well, where he left Oliveira's wheel and said, mm-hmm. "You close it." And all the other GC contenders looked at him like, "Why would we? Why would we care?" And then Lopez attacked him, and then Mas had to close Lopez. And I was like, "That was a complete waste of time. Like, what are you doing?" So I don't know. Then Gegenhardt came back. And he started pacing for Rodriguez, then threw a hairpin. Rodriguez attacked the group. Ayuso is there with Evenepoel's looking, by the way, the entire time of this climb, he looked completely comfortable and in no problem. They have Evenepoel, Mas, Ayuso, Almeida's yo-yoing, but he would eventually get dropped. And Roglic. Roglic is looking, I would say, okay, but on the limit. Like, I think one big attack could have been trouble for him, but there was a bit of stop and start, which helped him. Lopez looked all right until the end. And yeah, Rodriguez attacked, had the group on his wheel. No one counted him. He stopped, and then Evenepoel just started pacing to the finish. And then Rodriguez lost 11 seconds in the last 100 meters. It happened the other day. He lost 13 seconds to the group the other day. He seems to, I don't know, he just doesn't have that finishing burst at the end, because Evenepoel wound it up at the end. And Ayuso, this is what I was saying, like Pog, like Ayuso just holds on into that group and just keeps the draft. So Evenepoel finishes with Mas, Roglic, Ayuso, Lopez on 6 seconds, Rodriguez on 11 seconds. Gegenhardt, very good. I do wonder if he might have attacked to see who chases him and take back time, because I do think a 2-liter strategy for Ineos, if Carlos isn't stronger than the other guys fighting for top five, then you need something more than just pacing. You need something else. But yeah, GC, big shakeups in the 6th to the 10th region. Evenepoel, same gaps to Roglic, 241 to him, 303 to Mas. Rodriguez loses a little bit. He's on 406, 453 Ayuso, knocking on the door. Kelderman moves from 21st to 6th. on 628, Lopez is on 656, Almeida drops down two to, he's on 718, Palance, he's in the top 10, he's on 8 minutes, yeah. Gegenhardt moves down two on 805, O'Connor had not a great day, I don't think, he lost a minute or so, 55 seconds, Hindley lost 90 seconds, finishing with Valverde, so not a great day for him. But what does that mean for GC, Benji?
I think a lot when it comes to a team that you probably wouldn't expect me mentioning right now. And this is something that we've looked at yesterday when it comes to Higita trying to go in the breakaway, Kelderman trying to go in the breakaway for Bora to try and get into that top 10. I think there's another team that is perfectly situated with three riders in the top 20 on 11 minutes, 30 minutes, and 14 minutes. And that is EF Education first. You can bet that they will try and get in the breakaway, gain 10 minutes, and one of them will end up on the top 10. I 100% bet you. Like, they are like perfectly situated in GC to do that, right?
They have to for the points. They need multiple guys, even to go 9th or 11th, like Uran and Carthy. They have to go for that. And they've been, who they got? Even Padun. Like, Padun, if he stays with GC Group, if he just stays with them on Sierra Nevada, he'll move into the top 10 by default and won't, because the third week is so soft. So I think Uran and Padun look. Like, I think Padun will do better than Uran on Sierra Nevada, but it's hot and Padun doesn't do so well there. Yeah, there's the relegation stuff in play as well. Bike Exchange now no longer have Yates, so it's pretty much just EF fighting for that. I don't know. It's
Movistar,
but they just tank and have Mass do his best. Yeah. Like, they don't have multiple, and he won't be able to get in a breakaway.
Valverde is falling. Okay, he's now 17 instead of like 13, so they're losing spots.
I don't know why they
got
him to pace. Did they get him to pace?
I don't remember.
Bauer should fight for 10th.
Possibly. Maybe try and get in the breakaway in a similar fashion we just mentioned for Yev. You don't know, that might lead to a satellite rider role if Maz ends up dropping people behind. You never know that. You can always consider that on the go then if you got Valverde in the breakaway. I don't want to mention, a lot of people have been asking me on Twitter, and I think we spoke about it today in our chat as well, Patrick, that Rodriguez is wearing the Spanish jersey, the national championship jersey. Ayuso is wearing the white jersey. Now, I went into an in-depth investigation. Basically, I just asked Twitter, guys, what is this? Why is he wearing not the white jersey, but a Spanish jersey, despite being second in the youth classification? Because Remco's first, but is wearing red, so he can't wear white. Second is Carlos Rodriguez, but he's Spanish champion. And apparently the rules actually mention that specific thing. They say that in a situation that a second rider, well, the first rider, like Remco, has the red jersey, then he can't wear white. The second rider will have his world or national champion jersey prevail over the youth jersey. And apparently, according to the UCI rules, that is a must. On stage 9, Rodriguez was wearing white. And I'll be honest, my guess is that that's a mistake from the organizers. Because according to the UCI rules, how I read them, he should not be wearing white. And like today, Ayuso should be wearing white, as simple as that.
It'd be funny if Ayuso drops down and then Rodriguez starts wearing the white jersey again, where the organizers were just like, hold on, how about we have Spanish national champ jersey and a Spanish youngster in the white jersey? We'll double stack it. Why would we hide the Spanish national champs jersey? I don't know. But Rodriguez and Ayuso, it's looking good. Rodriguez is looking good for Sierra Nevada, but we have Pandera before then. But before even then, we have, I don't know, I was going to call it an interesting stage, but it might not be. It's from Ronda to Montilla tomorrow, and it's 169 kilometers long. There's no categorized climbs, but it's not a pure sprinter's day by any stretch. It's up and down, rolly all day. There's a bonus gate with an intermediate sprint on the top of a short little hill with about 15 kilometers to go. The final ramp, I believe, is 700 meters at 5%, or that's before the final ramp. I need to check the final exactly. I think Mads Pedersen, I think Trek have to go all in for him tomorrow. This is easier, in my opinion, than the LaGuardia Stage 4 finish, which was 900 meters, 8.4%. This has a little flat section sort of before the final punch. I really think they have to go for Pedersen tomorrow. And I think that might benefit Roglic. Roglic might take some seconds on Mas and others tomorrow. But who else will pace? Is it too hard for Groves?
There's also the issue, I think Scottson is out as well. I don't think it was COVID-related based on what I read in the tweet, but he was just feeling ill. So that's an extra rider for Bike Exchange that's not going to be pacing in this peloton. So they might want to keep people towards the end. I don't know. Like 7 years ago, I would have said Valverde. But that's not the case anymore. Like, he on paper doesn't have that punch anymore. Degenkolb will try if he's there in that group, but he doesn't have the teammates to pace, I think. I don't expect DSM to throw everything on the table for Degenkolb on this finish, is at least what I'd say. UAE doesn't have the riders to pace because they're focusing on 10 GC riders at the same time, because Polans is now also in the top 10. Alpecin, Merlierna, that finish is on paper too hard for him in my eyes. Lotto Soudal doesn't have anything.
Do Bahrain want to get in the break with Fred Wright and Luis Leon, or go for the from the GC group?
Yeah. I think there's a thing to be said about the breakaway on this stage, actually. It's very difficult to predict, you know. We might just end up with like three riders from continental Spanish teams and would be easily controllable. But if that's not the case, if it's a bigger break with more people trying to actually get something out of the stage from the breakaway, then it changes something. And I think a Cofidis with Kokar might be interesting on a finish like this if he was in the form that he was before the Tour de France. And that's the bummer now, because I haven't seen that in recent days. What would happen if Pedersen's in the breakaway and it takes Trek away to pace? Do they automatically make sure the break wins by doing that?
I think the only other team that might pace would be FDJ with Pacher. I don't see Jumbo Visma pacing with Dennis all day for this, for maybe some bonus. I don't know. It's a lot of effort. Maybe 10 seconds. He's only got 20 on Mass. Could be decisive if he wins it. But yeah, Pedersen, I think, is the A1 favorite for it. Haters out. This would have been a hater stage. Would Ineos have ridden for him? Maybe not. Fred Wright will be looking to break his bogey. I would like to see McNulty getting a break with Soler again. I think McNulty on these rolling hills, if they work people over, he's really, really hard to bring back if he goes long. So McNulty as well from the break would be someone I'd be looking at, but his legs haven't looked as good. But I'm going to go with... has he done? I just want to check he's done well this year first. I'm going to go with Rudy Millard from the break, and probably maybe Pedersen from the Gracisi group.
Very possible. I'm going to go with Fred Wright from the breakaway, and I'm going to put all my eggs in the breakaway basket just to be disappointed tomorrow when the peloton ends up winning. But while we predicted this, I do want to give some credit to a rider that attacked today, and we did not mention him in the actual recap of the stage, Daniel Navarro. And he's a guy that rides for Burgos now, but he's actually got a big history, because in 2012, he was riding for Saxobank, the team that Alberto Contador was leader at. Eventually that year, he also got suspended, if my mind serves me right, for the stake gate. And I think Navarro was a super domestique for like multiple years, and I was shocked to see him attack and still be there today. Just wanted to mention that. It was like, you've got that scene in Star Wars where Obi-Wan Kenobi says, "It's a name I haven't heard in a long time." That was exactly my reaction to Daniel Navarro attacking at this moment. So yeah, just wanted to give that extra to this stage. I don't know why I wanted to say it.
39 years old. He top 10 the Tour in 2013. So yeah, still going with Burgos, who haven't really got much out of this race yet. But yeah, Fred Wright, I don't know, tricky stage tomorrow to call, because it might all land on Trek and Aguirre's not been looking good, not expecting huge GC gaps. Thanks for listening, as always, and we'll see you with the recap of the stage tomorrow. Ciao.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.